We talked this subject in our 12 years that we've been sitting around these microphones several times, but we came up a few weeks ago, we've been talking about the possibility of having a Sports Hall of Fame for our area. Well, even before that came up, Reese had mentioned to me a couple of times, we had talked about it. What may be needed also is a Fast Pitch Softball Hall of Fame for our area. Fast pitch softball, man, back in my early days, was the king of what happened in the summer. If you didn't play fast pitch softball, you were just out of it. And there's been so many great players that's been coming through our area. We want to take a little time tonight and talk about some of these guys and how this may could happen. Reese, you were right in the middle of it. You were in the kind of bridge the gap between what in Mr. Jerry's time coming through right. up to Wilford's time coming
well,
through.
Well, and even Glenn Moore's time. Yeah. It's probably an era there, like I say, when Jerry played, the first time I ever saw a game was them playing, and I kind of came along. My group came along in the middle, and along with Jimmy Rodas and Wilford Case, and then the Glenn Moore kind of ended it all, era kind of ended it as best I can put it all together. But see, what gets me, I don't go back to the days when Mr. Jerry just started. Who was playing back then, and that's an area I'm in the dark on.
We talked about yesterday on the phone, Mr. Jerry. What brought fast pitch softball to Southwest Mississippi, you thought, was the fact of people coming home from the war who had played this game in service?
Okay, I went into service in 52, January 52. And prior to going into service, we played mostly baseball. And even communities like Elders Campground and Pine Knot and places like that, they had men's fast pitch, baseball. And I came home in the fall of 54. And I didn't start playing really until in 55, but they had a pretty good little league up at Summit. It had some good fast pitch teams. And we got a team out in the Villa, Oakdale, Fernwood community. And they were the team from Johnson Chapel. That's when I met Scout Williams for the first time. And Macomb had a team. They had a team for two or three years, and they had gone to the state tournament the year before I got out of service, and I played in that league that year, and then at the end of the season, they asked me did I want to go to state tournament with them, Macomb team, so I did, and I stayed with them until I was told to. You're too old to play.
Couldn't get the glove on the ground. Time to go home. Jimmy, what about you? How'd you get started in this game?
Well, I kind of like Reese said, or some of the first game I ever saw played, I played in it. I was about 12 years old, I guess, and I went with my cousin Mike and his dad out to Holmesville, and they had a game there that night with Scout Williams pitching against Donald Dickerson. They didn't have enough on Scout's team, so Mike and I both got to play in the outfield that night and had the pleasure of batting off of Donald Dickerson. And if any of you, I know Jerry knows, but if you'd have known him in his prime, that wasn't a prize thing to do. I don't remember what year that was, but I was about 12 years old, and that was in the early 60s, I know.
How'd you get started in the pitching end of it?
Well... Every church, if you remember correctly, in Pike County, just about every church had a team. And I started pitching for our church team, which we didn't call it the little Mount Zion Church out at Osaka, but we called it Centerville. We had a team out at Centerville in the intermediate leagues, and you had to go to church to play on this team now. So you had to be there at least once a month to get to play. And so we had a lot of people start coming to church and played on the team. So, you know, that's where I first started. And by the time I learned a little bit about pitching, watching Scout, and I went and watched them play. I watched Scout Williams and Donald Dickerson pitch. Julius Brent whose name will come up later probably, but a lot of those guys that pitched around here, and that's how I learned. I never had any instruction or anything like that. But that's where I learned, just watching.
Wilford, you came out of the baseball era, where you came from baseball to playing fast pitch softball. Is that kind of how that worked?
Yeah, yes, it was, Robbie. Actually, I guess the first fast pitch game I played, like Jimmy, was at Eastport. They used to hold a July 4th tournament there every year. And we happened to, me and some friends of mine, I think baseball season, we didn't have a game that particular weekend or that day, but Mr. Robert Prescott and Unity was playing in that tournament there at East Fork, and they needed a player or two, so they asked me to play with them that day, and I think I was probably 16 years old at the time, and fell in love with it right away. I mean, it was a highly competitive game at a young age for me, just like Jimmy. I mean, I played against some of the best that was out there, and I cut my teeth on those guys. But yeah, I came out of, you know, the summer league baseball and fulfilled the rest of my ball playing days with men's fast pitch softball.
Reese, how'd you get involved?
Oh, Lord. Well, you know, I was always up in the middle of everything there was sports involved, and from the time I was old enough to run up and down behind the bleachers, I actually started off umpiring.
You and Clawhammer, right?
Yeah, me and Clawhammer. I started off umpiring. I don't remember exactly how, except I probably showed up at a game and it didn't have an umpire, and they said, "You get out there and umpire," and I did. And then they started paying a little bit of money for doing it, and you know, I was in early days of college or high school, and I needed a dollar or two. I got 8-10 ball games on a Saturday. I don't know how I did it, but I did it, and I actually kind of got to start umpire. And Gerald Miller had put together a team in Liberty, and of young kids, and most of them, a lot of them who wound up being on my team with Mabry. And I'd umpire those games, and Gerald, you know, if you knew Gerald Miller, he'd call you up one day and say, "I can't be there. You go take that team and go coach them." And I guess that's exactly the way I got started, and I got smart guy out of the umpiring business.
So you're trying to tell me that you got into softball because beer wasn't free in college?
Yeah, right.
Okay, I just want to make sure we had this straight.
But I want to touch on one little thing right quick. I believe about the war deal, from what I know, was the reason it really got going with people coming back out of service. And I would think on military bases there wasn't room for big baseball fields, but they could carve out enough room for a softball field to be on military bases.
That's true. In my case, I probably the best team I ever played on was the 2 years I played in service, and Eddie Malone now, but he in the when the started coming back in 45 and 46, he had the Macomb Dingers, and they
heard of that one.
Well, I think a body man, they call them Dingers,
yeah, okay,
when they're something.
Right.
And if a lot of people were looking for jobs, he'd give them a job as a dinger to play ball. And at that time, Jackson had a real good team,
right?
And Danny Fisher and they were real good, and they would come down here, and Macomb would go to the coast. They had some good teams on the coast near Keesler, I think. And,
right.
And he had some, and that was in the 46 to about 50, and then it really started picking up with new teams and everything around 1954, 55, and they were some good ball players, and they put fields at every little church community around. And
well, that's the other part. The church part of this is, in my era, and Jimmy and Wilford's era, the church thing blew it up, because every church in, as Jimmy said, in Pike County, and a bunch of them in the Mid County, had a church team for boys. There wasn't Babe Ruth baseball in that era in a lot of places, and certainly wasn't, and I know over in Mid County. And so in the summer, if you're going to play ball, you played on the church fast-pitch boys team. I can name so many players like Coon Leahy and Doc Leahy and I can just Dennis Lee and several people who played down that got their very start pitching on a 15-year-old church team.
And some of the pitchers, if they'd kept at it, they would have been real good pitchers, you know.
Jerry Fortenberry, I watched you play, and my goodness, you had to be the best center fielder and the fastest guy I have ever seen on the bases. They would lay a bunt down, and Jerry would go to third and be grinning when the ball got there standing up.
He did good. That's the way I wrote it.
Well, it's the truth. It's the truth. But take us back a little bit to when you hooked up with that Macomb team that became the Mechanic State Bank team. You won several state championships, and you guys became one of the elite teams in the state and the region. Talk about some of the guys you played with back then.
Well, that was probably because we had pitching, and that was the name of the game, and there wasn't a lot of pitchers here because it really hadn't got kickback started, the young teams. But Walter Parker, he was a good pitcher, and prior to the Summit deal, they had some kind of little team here in Macomb. I didn't have Little League then, but they had played together a pretty good while. And like I said, I played up at Summit with our little community team, and they asked me to play, and then I guess I played with them for 10 years after that. Some of the better players we had was, of course, the Holmes boys, Billy and
George.
George was one of the best catchers around. You better not go to sleep on him. He'd hit you. And Brother Felder on first, and Billy on short, and Buddy DeQuilla, Charlie Collada. And we'd pick up, Billy Ray Jones in the summer sometime, and Archie Phipps, one of the best third basemen around. And we won the first year I played with them, we lucked out and won the state tournament, and then we won it two more years. That's three in a row. And we won one regional. Not win it. We went to the finals one year in the regionals. But as it went along, we first started out going to Jackson to play in the state tournament. You had maybe three or four teams, but it was everywhere. You got some real good teams out of Starkville, Greenville, and Natchez, and Brookhaven with Chuck Smith. Benny, what was the coach here?
Benny Kimball,
and some good ball players up there.
Wilford, best three pitchers you ever saw in this area?
Well, I want to say Jimmy Rodas, Scott Williams, and... faced a bunch of them, but the one guy that gave me the biggest fits was a wiry guy from out East Fort, Buddy Moore. Had one of the best rise balls that I've ever seen. I chased that thing 1,000 times. But like I said earlier, I came through with the cream of the crop as far as the pitching. And Jerry's right. Pitching was what it was all about. And coming out of a baseball, playing baseball with a big baseball loop swing, you had to shorten your swing, to be able to make contact with a softball. But those by far are probably the three best I'd faced. But, I faced Don Dickerson and, Lewis McKenzie and Ken McCann and, countless others. Off the top of my head, I can't think right now, but with some amazing, amazing pitchers.
Jimmy, what about you? Let's take Jimmy Rodas out of the question. Give me the three best pitchers you saw in this area.
Scott Williams, Donald Dickerson, and I'm going to have to say Ken McCann was one of the best at changing speeds of anybody I ever seen. Those three were one of the three of the best I ever had to bat off in this area here. It was just... McCann changed speed. He couldn't break a window sometimes if he threw it hard, but he could move the ball, hit his spots, and throw it where he wanted at whatever speed he wanted. And of course, everybody knows Scout and Donald. They just intimidated you when they were announced as the pitcher.
What did it take, Jimmy, to be a pitcher? How much time did it take to develop to be a pitcher in fast pitch softball?
I don't know. I'm not through yet.
It's that long, huh?
I'm going to tell you the honest truth. I learned something teaching girls. I learned things that if I'd have known when I was pitching that I could have been a lot better than I was. It just took me, and the main thing that made me a pitcher was confidence. And, you know, having a good catcher, I was fortunate to have some of the best catchers that ever played in this part of the country was Ricky Allen, and Aubrey Matthews called for me quite a bit. And I'll just name him Randy Pikett. Old haircut.
Yep.
Haircut was one that would take one anywhere it was, and he didn't miss them very often. But having a good catcher and having the defense behind you, it makes you be a good pitcher. I mean, and I threw a lot of pitches upside of my daddy's corn crib out there with one or two balls that I had to chase if I missed. So it learned you to be a pitcher.
Reese, what about you in your coaching time? Who were the three best you saw as far as being a coach?
Well, in this area, we didn't get to play Donald Dirksen very much, so I know he was a great pitcher, but certainly Scott Williams is number one, I think, on everybody's list for sure. Jimmy Rodas. But there were a couple more. Ray Miller from down Lion Creek was a tough competitor. And Lane Campbell, who was kind of imported in here, as Mr. Jerry talked about, there's some fellow over in a mid-county making turkey collars needed a turkey collar manufacturer who could throw left-handed fast pitch. And so he brought him in here for a few seasons. But Lane Campbell, being that we didn't see many left-handers, he was a tough guy.
Mr. Jerry, your time. What's the three?
Well, for our team, Tommy Parker had some real good games. In fact, in the state tournament one year, he pitched a doubleheader, back-to-back games, and won both of them. And Donald Dickerson, he was good. He wouldn't get shook up. I remember one night we were playing, and he always had on a watch, and they got a couple of men on, and they said, "Hey, old man, what time is it?" And he looked at his watch and said, "Time for us to bat," and struck out the next three.
Reese, before we move on too far, we got to have the Scout Williams story for where you go out to the national tournament.
Well, we went to a regional at Oklahoma City, and Scout, it was on up in the age by that time, and if you knew Scout, he could shuffle with the best with his feet and do the old man walk when he wanted to. We had an umpire behind the plate that he didn't get a call to, and so he fires one up there, and the guy calls it a ball, and Scout takes some little baby steps with his feet almost all the way up to the plate, and he bends down and looks at that umpire, and he said, where was that? And he said, "A little bit outside, Scout. That's where I thought it was." And he goes back out there to rubber, and he throws another one, and it calls it a ball, and he does them little shuffles up there again. And he said, "Where was that?" And he said, "It was outside." He said, "That's where I thought it was." And he shuffles them little feet back out there to the mound. He throws another, and it looked like it was right down the middle. And the guy calls it a ball, and Scott this time goes up there. He's still down in his crouch, the umpire, and he gets down and bends over as tall as he was, and kind of looked upside down at that guy, right nose to nose, and he said, "Where was that one?" And he kind of stuttered a couple times. He said, "That's what I thought you was doing," and he went all the way back. Now, he got every pitch after that. Called a strike, I believe. So,
Jimmy Rodas.
He could intimidate.
Oh, you. He could. Watching him play, there was no doubt about that. Jimmy Rodas, three, four best players you saw in Southwest Mississippi in fast pitch softball during your time.
Man, that's a tough question.
That's what I'm here for.
Start with me on that. Well, you know, we had players that played in every position. Most people could play any position. That's the kind of athletes they were. And as far as, you know, the best three players I ever saw, there's so many. I'd have to say the fastest I ever played against was Jerry Fortenberry. And when Jerry squared around with that one-handed bunt he did, he was just an automatic hit. And he probably was the first slapper I ever saw. And the hardest batter that I ever had to get out was Larry Allred. he could just hit it somewhere. It didn't matter how hard he hit it, but it would find a hole. And probably the best power hitter I've seen around here was Ricky Allen. And I was just tickled to have him on my team.
Race three best.
Oh, that's almost impossible. I remember being very impressed when I first got involved with this with Larry Allred, what a good player he was. I second that. Clyde Brown was probably as good as he advertised himself to be. I mean, he was amazing. I saw him call shots. I'm gonna turn around to a woman in the stand one night and said, "I'm fixing a home run right there," and the next pitch he hit it there. Stuff like that. He was not only a great athlete, he was a super showman. I had one on my team played third base, Coon Leahy. Couldn't hit his hat size. Let me tell you what, you couldn't get one by him at third base. He was as good as he come. There were so many good players. I'm probably not even thinking of all of them right off the top of my head, but I'll go with those three right off the top of my head.
Well, for three best.
Well, I'm going to say Ricky Allen for sure. Pitching-wise, is scouts. And I'm going to throw Jimmy in there because Jimmy was a fantastic pitcher, but he could also hit softball. So, as those guys have said, there's so many great players, and to name three is really tough. But because I played so much with those guys, that's the three, my top three.
Mr. Jay, in your time, if you had to say three best players, who'd you see?
Wow. Well, a lot of players at these country teams I didn't get to see play, and I don't know. During my group, I don't know, Archie Phipps was probably about the best third baseman that I thought was in state tournaments back then, and I'll have to go with George Holmes as a catcher, and we had mentioned some more good players. Brother Felder was a good first baseman, so.
I think that, an interesting approach would be to go almost like position by position because there were a lot of good catchers. Aubrey Matthews has been mentioned, but he was there when we first got started. There wasn't a better catcher around than Aubrey Matthews. Not only would he catch, he'd whip your tail after the game if you didn't like the way you caught. great third basemen, and we talked about Clyde Brown and Coon Leahy, go around the infield. I had Reggie Jones played second base for me. He was a good power hitter. And we know, great athlete and everything he's ever done. I should have made a list of all these folks when I could think of them today. But I think it'd be interesting to go position by position.
Let's do it real quick. First base, who's the best first baseman, Jimmy?
First baseman, I'm going to have to go with probably Ronnie Prescott.
Ronnie
was good.
What about you, Wilford, first baseman?
Yeah, I would too. I played with Ronnie a lot of years, and I think best first baseman I've ever played with, yes.
Mr. Jerry?
First base. I'll stick with Brother because he's a teammate.
Yeah.
Second base, Reese, who you got?
I'm going to have to vote for my man, Reggie Jones. He was not a great athlete, hit the ball real well.
Mr. Jerry, second baseman.
Second base. Whew. Skip me, let me come back to
come
that.
Back and tell you. What about you, Wilford, second baseman?
I say Joe Simmons.
Joe Simmons. What about you, Jimmy?
Bobby Ray McKenzie.
Back to you, Mr. Jerry. We don't give you a pass on that.
David Williamson, did he play second?
Short.
Okay, he played short, okay.
All right, let's go to shortstop. We'll start with you, Wilford. Best shortstop you saw?
Let's see. I'm going to say Mike Thompson.
What about you, Jimmy?
I'm going to have to go with a Rodas boy there. My brother David couldn't hit his weight either, but he could catch, and he could play. He had an arm. He could go in a hole and get him.
I go with Billy Holmes.
Billy Holmes. Hey, what about you,
Neil? I was just thinking about Thomas Willie.
He was good.
Yeah.
But he might.
What do you consider Clyde Brown? Is he a third baseman?
Anywhere.
Clyde could play anywhere.
Utility.
Anywhere.
All right, what about third base? Reese, we'll go with you.
Well, I already said Clyde Brown, and then Coon Leahy would be my second.
Jimmy?
Third base for me would be Ralph Alford.
Wilford?
I'd say Coon Leahy.
I'm going to go with Archie Phipps.
Archie Phipps. Let's go out. If we go outfield, let's say three. Give me your top three outfielders that you think would be in this number, the three best that you saw play fast-pitch softball here in southwest Mississippi. Reese, I'll give everybody else a chance to think. Let you go first.
You're going to put me on the bottom.
I always like to.
Larry Allred. So many. You know, you're a lot more familiar with your team than sometimes when it comes down to this. I had Jesse Maber in left field, who was a tough out, had a great arm, and I'd have to throw him in there. Lee Wilson played center. He was fast, could cover a lot of ground. He just had he didn't hit quite as well as a lot of these folks did. I'm trying to come up with another one. I'm going to say
I'll let you hold one. All right. Jimmy, what about you?
Well, I had several that played for me, with me, and probably the best one was little Mike Stiff that played in the outfield for us, played left field. And I also had played with Jerry Fortenberry. Jerry was a good outfielder, and so was Butch Seals. Not many people realize Butch could play the outfield. He could hit around, and he could hit, too. And those three were really good outfielders.
Wilford, three outfielders.
Jerry Fortenberry, Larry Allred, and I'm going to say Charlie Smith.
Aubrey McEwen wasn't bad. He could throw it from here to Price, Dale.
But if he just didn't make you wear his shoes.
He still carries them around the car in case anybody wants to play. You know? I don't know. There's a lot of good outfielders. Clyde Brown could play right now.
Aubrey McEwen. Reese, you got your pocket?
Right. Robbie Felder.
Go ahead, Jimmy.
All these positions that we named, you know, Clyde Brown, and I talked to somebody today, and I just told them that there was not a position on the field out of the nine that Clyde was not adept at. He could play wherever you put him and wouldn't make any errors and would play the position like it was supposed to be played. He could pitch, he could catch, he could play outfield, infield, wherever you wanted. He was the man, and he'll always be the best.
What was the reason, guys, that fast pitch softball took off in southwest Mississippi and got as big as it did at one time? Can you point to a reason or two, Reese?
I'm going to say the blow up of the church league teams just provide a lot of guys who learn how to throw at a very early age, because pitching is the deal, and there wasn't anywhere to learn pitching except going out there with these as a young boy and learning how to throw.
I think
that was a big blow up from the church league.
I think it is, and they had all ages from eight. Right. They didn't have little league in a lot of places, right. And they started them out young out in the villa.
Kirby Deere run them, many of them threw out there.
He was different from Jimmy. You had to go two Sundays a month out there.
Jimmy, what was the reason fast pitch softball got as big as it did at one time in southwest Mississippi?
It was the church. The churches started this, and it outgrew church league softball. We had a league here. They had a league in Liberty. They had a league. Mr. Kirby Deere had a league. We started playing those leagues, and then tournament ball started, which included like Baton Rouge. Baton Rouge was one of the hotbeds for fast pitch in the whole nation. They probably had 120 teams down there, and they had tournaments every weekend. And a lot of us up here would either get a team up, pick up a church, bunch of church people, and get together and go and play in those tournaments. And a lot of times when the guys that we picked up from the church teams lost their religion when they got to Baton Rouge in the church in a tournament down there, you know. But we had that was the reason for a lot of this growing up, was it got real popular with tournament ball and traveling and playing tournaments.
What about you, Wilford? What do you see? You came along a little bit later. What got fast pitch softball to continue?
Well, I think, of course, these guys have been right. Church, I think Church started it, but yeah, I think the allure of travel and going to Baton Rouge and you know, Lake Charles, Lafayette, you know, Greenville, different places to play. And for me, it was just such a highly competitive, you know, game. I mean, it's no doubt it's fast-paced, it's quick, and if you had a competitive bone in your body, that's the thing you wanted to do. And it was a challenge. And I think a lot of people were like the fact that, as Jimmy said, you can go travel and play. And, you know, the team from Southwest Mississippi fared well wherever we went. You know, we fared well with some of the nation's best teams. We played a lot of open-class ball, you know, tournaments from all, people all over the country, and people that were paid to play and things like that. So, you know, we did pretty well against some of those guys. But I think the allure of travel and just being on a tournament team per se was a big attraction for that.
We've talked about players. We've called a lot of names out in this group here. Who were the guys that got fast pitch started and kept it going? Not the players. Who were the guys that kept this stuff alive? And, Mr. Jerry, back in, when you were playing it, who was the guy that kind of kept fast pitch going?
Wow, that's a tough question. I don't know. Well, just like guys like Eddie Malone, you know, he loved the team. And the team I played on, I guess, Walter Parker's dad, he kept pushing them, and they had a played every summer when they up until they got up grown. And
Reese, like in Mid-County, did you have to have somebody in area that kind of was the leader of getting fast pitch going and keeping it going?
Well, in Liberty was Gerald Miller, no question. He pushed to get the field built behind where First Bank was. We first started playing, and it was a major push in getting to J.C. Park, where we had two fields, and we were able to host state tournaments and stuff like that. But you got to go back to Doc and Udy Cook at Eastport for Eastport Field, and Buddy Moore and all his plan for keeping that thing going out there. And probably even goes back prior to that, but there were Mr. Prescott, Rat Prescott's dad down at Unity. They had a field, and I'd say he was the one that kind of pushed out. Kirby Deer probably hosted as many games as anybody I know.
And Hollis Lang down at Woodrow, he stayed out there with those kids. And
Jimmy, who do you see as a couple of guys that kind of just guided fast pitch through these times as they had the most success?
Well, Jerry said it just then. Kirby Deer out there was one of the best around here at hosting tournaments. Mr. Kirby was he was a genuine, he was a showman. I mean, he got everything going. He'd host the tournaments, and you know, you wanted to play at Navilla. I mean, he had a fine place out there to play, and you know, he just kept, he got good teams to come. He had his pick of the teams, mostly of who he had to come there. And I think Pete Brogan done a lot for softball in Pecan, too. And he probably was one of the better coaches that I ever played for.
Well, for what about in your time coming toward the end there? Who were the people that kept it going?
Well, no doubt Kirby Deer was a big factor in that. Robbie keep things going. And, you know, as this thing wound down, I know Kel Thompson, you know, and Coach Glenn Moore and – and, you know, Harold Williams, they fought this thing for several years, you know, long after I had been playing, you know, to try to keep it going. But I think Kirby Deer, for me, would be the person. And, of course, Mr. Robert Prescott, you know. And the thing is, each community pretty much had a team. And Mr. Robert was who I played, you know, for. And then later on, Emerson Smiley took over that team. But yeah, I say Kirby because he hosted so many tournaments out there at Navilla. And we played, my goodness, don't tell how many games there, but, you know, I played with him up until I got good enough to play with Jimmy, you know, not play against him. So, but anyway, yeah, I say Kirby Deer.
One thing you count on, if Kirby Deer didn't have a tournament this week, he was going to have one the next week. So
that's right. Right.
Jimmy, what caused the downfall of fast pitch softball in Southwest Mississippi?
I'll probably get ripped for this, but I, you know, kids didn't want to learn to pitch. It was hot. It got dirty. And you had to practice. The main thing was the young kids got into slow pitch softball, and it ruined the whole thing for fast pitch. And it took over because it was so easy to hit the ball out of the park. And that wasn't the case in fast pitch. You had to earn what you got. That was, it just seemed like slow pitch, they just gave it to you. But anyhow, the downfall of the pitcher was due to that. They didn't want anybody to want to work, and it just went away.
Reese?
Well, it's definitely the lack of pitching. And the churches were not in the fast pitch like they once were, and they probably migrated to slow pitch because more people could play, and we kind of entered that era where everybody got a trophy, so you don't want to leave anybody out. And there wasn't that incubator there for people to continue to learn how to pitch. And I think that was the biggest issue.
That's probably true, because back when we had the fast pitch teams, I don't think they even had slow pitch teams.
Right. No, they didn't.
Well, you were kind of in the end of it. What happened?
I agree. It's, Jimmy's right. You know, the thing about slow pitch, it was easy. If you had some ability or talent, you could, you know, step out of your car and go play. You know, fast pitch softball was much different. You had to practice. And you had to work because it was such a fast-paced game. And I think one thing, and Reese making verify this, I think one thing that hurt us some in Southwest Mississippi was we started combining some of our league teams. You know, as we would go off and play some of these better teams, and we would combine some teams. I know the Unity and I think Pete Wade's team combined. We took, you know, six or seven of their best with our six or seven. So we combined, two teams to make one. And then, you know, to Jimmy's point, you know, pitching certainly died off when that happened. And you know, that was the end of the game, you know, for that. And by combining teams and pretty much eliminating the leagues, we started playing tournament ball. And we didn't make a lot of room, I think, this is my opinion, for younger people to, you know, to come aboard and nurture them.
That's a great point, Wilford. I think we all got to chasing being able to play with those Class A guys in Baton Rouge, and because of that, we recruited and got the 11 best players we could keep together and play ball, and we didn't have, as Jimmy and you and other folks probably got their first taste of it by somebody didn't show up one night and they needed another player, so they stuck you in right field. We never did have that come along because we were all chasing that heavy tournament stuff.
That's right.
Surprised that the revival of fast pitch softball is now in girls?
Well, it really surprised me when it first happened. It's a great game. I still enjoy watching it because, let me tell you what, fast pitch softball is an athletic game. You can't be anything but a great athlete to stay on that field, and I'm amazed what these girls are able to do.
I'd hate to bat against some of them, too.
Jimmy, you've been involved with the rise of girls and women's fast-pitch softball. Were you surprised that it took off like it did?
Well, yeah, in a way I was here. California had been playing it a lot longer than we have. You know, of course, they played 10 years in college before we ever started it here. And, you know, women had played it all over the country, even in the last times of us playing. I remember in the last few years that I played, I watched a kid at Forest Park in Baton Rouge, about a 14-year-old girl, throwing it as hard as I could down there then. She was, you know, they had a little team out there, and they had a little tournament going on there side of the street. And I was amazed at seeing that. And that was, you know, probably in the late 80s. And all of a sudden, it blossomed out into everywhere. And finally, Mississippi caught up and got into it in about 1999 or something like that. And it has really taken off. And I'm like Jerry, I for sure wouldn't want to bat off some of those guys, those girls.
It was kind of interesting that Lafayette, Louisiana took off real early and then Baton Rouge. And we saw that some of those early championships came out of, in college, came out of UL Lafayette and McNeese down in that area. I don't know exactly what kicked it off down that area, but they were playing a long time before we were up here.
Yeah, that's right.
How do we go about selling fast pitch softball the way it was in Southwest Mississippi to people who a lot of them do not know anything at all about it? Please?
I don't know.
We talk about a Hall of Fame. Yeah, Let's say this. How do we sell what we know about at our age, which is in this table? I'm probably the youngest one sitting around it at 63. How do we sell this to people as an idea that we need?
Well, I think most people have heard the stories, and I think it's I'm always a believer, Mr. Jerry, that people like us have a duty to tell that story and to keep telling that story. And people have heard the stories. They may not have seen the games. And I think that's kind of our role with the Hall of Fame, is to make that story still stay alive. And I think because of that, there are enough people who have heard something about it from their daddy to granddaddy or whatever, that that I believe that's the way you have to approach it.
I agree with everything you've said, Reese, and I think we have to put our committee together, and I can see a nucleus around this table, and I think we have 8 or 10 in our initial class, and have a banquet, and let's just go ahead and do it.
Jimmy, you're not outspoken. What do you see as the reason there?
Well, you know, I'm with you guys. I mean, I've got kids that come to me, and I'm showing them how to pitch, and they look at me and say, "Well, how do you know how to do that?" You know, and then their parents, they don't realize that I pitched 30 years ahead of them, and I mean, they're younger than that, you know, and they don't understand about me and playing this game. And I had some guy come in or here a few weeks ago and say, "Hey, you ever heard of the Kingness Court?" I said, I got to pitch against him, and in his later years, and he had a young man named Glenn Moore that was out there pitching for him then, and when I mentioned the name Glenn Moore, "Oh, you mean the Baylor coach?" Yeah, but he used to play here, believe me, before he got famous.
Right.
But I don't know what it'll take. I'm like them, just sit down and let's do it. Just put it together, see what happens.
I think around this table, we're all in, so we can make the next move now to see what we can come up with and how we can get it done. Mr. Jerry Fortenberry, thanks for your time for coming by tonight. Jimmy, thanks for taking the time to be with us. Wilford, where are you now, Texas?
Yeah, I'm in Longview, Texas, Robbie. Been here 12 and a half years.
Thanks for taking the time to be with us. We sure appreciate it.
Hey, enjoyed it, Robbie. Thank you very much.
Thank you all for talking Fast Pitch Softball. We'll continue this discussion throughout the summer here on Chasing Foul Balls, and we'll see what we can do to get some kind of a place started. I reckon maybe the starting point is to talk to Greenville and see how they started theirs and what they did to get it started.
Yeah, Greenville, as Jimmy told us, has got their own up there, and maybe we can find out some information. I think the number one thing is to have somewhere to house the information and to have a committee who spans all these eras, it can go back and nominate people.
We'll talk more about it in the next couple of weeks here on Chasing Foul Balls.